The CP had gotten that far by using its wits and common sense. In February, a month after Strobridge's all but fruitless call for labor, Charlie Crocker had met with him and raised the question of hiring Chinese. He said some 20 of them had worked, and worked well, on the Dutch Flat and Donner Lake wagon road. Stroh, as he was known to his friends, was opposed. He said all the whites currently working for him would take off, and anyway, what did the Chinese know about railroad construction? They couldn't possibly do the work. They averaged 120 pounds in weight, and only a few were taller than 4 feet 10 inches. "I will not boss Chinese," he declared. "They built the Great Wall of China, didn't they?" replied Crocker. "Besides, who said laborers have to be white to build railroads?" Strobridge, still skeptical, agreed to hire 50 local, that is, living in Auburn, Chinese, and try them out for a month under white supervisors. There were in California at that time some 60,000 Chinese, nearly all adults, and the great proportion of them males. They had come for the same reason as the whites, to make money, first of all in the gold fields. But California law discriminated against them in every way possible, and the state did all it could to degrade them and deny them a decent livelihood. They were not allowed to work on the mother lode. To work the tailing, they had to pay a miner's tax, a $4 per head so-called permission tax, plus a $2 water tax. In addition, the Chinese had to pay a personal tax, a hospital tax, a $2 school tax, and a property tax. But they could not go to public school. They were denied citizenship. They could not vote, nor could they testify in court. Nevertheless, they paid more than $2 million in taxes. If Chinese dared to venture into a new mining area, the whites would set on them, beat them, rob them, sometimes kill them. Thus the saying, "Not a Chinaman's chance." They were called coolies, a Hindu term meaning unskilled labor. The British picked it up and then passed it on to the Americans, who applied it to the Chinese. The politicians cursed them, vied with one another about who hated the Chinese the most, declared them to be dregs, said they worried about the terrible habits the Chinese brought with them. One of the leaders in this ranting and raving was Governor Stanford. While campaigning, he had called the Chinese the dregs of Asia and that degraded race. In 1858, the California legislature banned any further importations. Still, they came. It got so bad that a young Californian appointed to collect the miners' tax wrote in his diary, "Had a China fight. Knocked down some and drawed out our pistols on the rest. Had a great time. Chinaman's tails cut off. Down at the Little Yuba River, shot a Chinaman. Had a hell of a time." That same tax collector later was appointed by President Ulysses S. Grant to be ambassador to Japan. In the Bancroft Library at the University of California, Berkeley, there are Chinese English and English Chinese phrase books from 1867. The English speakers learned how to say in Chinese, "Can you get me a good boy? He wants $8 per month. He ought to be satisfied with $6. I think he is very stupid. I want to cut his wages." Two phrases that never appear in the English-Chinese book are, "How are you?" and "Thank you." The Chinese could learn to say in English to employers, "Yes, madam," "You must not strike me," and so forth. To authorities, "He does not intend to pay me my wages. He claimed my mine. He tries to extort money from me. He took it from me by violence. He assaulted me. The man struck the Chinese boy on the head. He came to his death by homicide. He was murdered by a thief. He was shot dead by his enemy. He was flogged publicly twice in the streets. He was frozen to death in the snow." White men despised the Chinese even as they used them. They constantly compared the Chinese to another subordinate group, white women. The Chinese were small, with delicate hands and hairless faces and long braided hair. One editor called them half-made men, which fit nicely with their two most common jobs, laundrymen and domestic servants. But the same editor referred to their dreadful vitality. After 1858, many Chinese had come to America in response to pamphlets put out by the several companies of Chinese merchants residing in San Francisco, advertising the high price of labor. The merchant companies took their pay from a percentage of a man's earnings, plus a large bonus. They agreed to return a man to China free of charge. In the event of sickness, he would be cared for. In case of death, they would send the body home to be buried in the Celestial Empire. These contracts were faithfully fulfilled. Nonetheless, the ships rivaled the slave ships for gruesomeness. In California, the Chinese could find work as domestics, cooks, laundrymen, housekeepers, gardeners, errand boys, and so on. Like most previous immigrants, they sent back to China letters to their families urging their wives, children, parents, brothers, and sisters to come. They landed in San Francisco, which had the largest number of Chinese, and was known to them, in their own language, as the Big City, Tai Fao, First City. Next came Sacramento, the Yi Fao, or Second City. Marysville was the third city. In 1868, Lippincott's magazine ran an article on the Chinese in California. The purpose of every Chinaman in coming here is to amass such a sum, trifling in our eyes, in 3 or 4 years, as in China will give him support for life. The Chinese toiled without ceasing. He never spends his money. No white man could ever surpass his industry. The article concluded with a plea for the federal government to do something to protect the Chinese. After all, it said, there was a Freedmen's Bureau to protect the newly freed slave.